I am excited to be with you this morning. We had an amazing event yesterday. We had helpers, helpers that were 2 years old pulling around a wagon to hand out water. We had helpers that came in their walkers and sat out here in the lobby to direct people to the bathroom and to make them feel welcome and everything in between. And it was amazing. I love it when three different churches can get together for the kingdom and not just for a community. So thank you for everyone that helped. Again, it was an amazing experience. So, I wasn't supposed to be preaching today. Trevor's supposed to be preaching today. I don't know if you heard, Trevor on Thursday morning was riding his bike to the train station to get on the train to go to work. He wasn't hit by a car, so we're happy about that. But he wrecked his bicycle. He wrecked his bike, and it happened so fast, his face hit the pavement going 15 miles an hour. So, Trevor's hurting, broke some facial bones, lost some teeth, and I was visiting in the hospital, and he said to me, "I still think I can preach on Sunday." And I said, "I appreciate that enthusiasm, but you just worry about getting better. I'll put something together for Sunday, so no worries." So I'm stepping in for him today, so definitely keep him in your prayers, he and his wife, and pray that he does not have to have surgery. So that was the positive, the way the x-ray said it was all still in the right place, just broken. So if it'll heal like it is, they won't have to do surgery, so I'm excited about that. So again, I'm T.W. Davis, I'm happy to be here this morning, and we're in a journey going through John, looking at the seven signs that John records for us in his gospel. And we're calling that the Mosaic of Glory. And we have arrived today at number six of these seven. Number six of these seven, the man who's healed from being blind from birth. And Jesus performed many miracles, but John carefully recorded these seven to show us who the true picture of the character and the glory of Jesus. And we've seen already so far in these signs that Jesus is the Lord of nature, the Lord of life, the restorer of powers, the food by which we live, and our guide and our helper. So as we hear about today's miracle, today's sign, we are going to be thinking, what is the deep meaning? What is the real reason? What is the significance behind the healing of this man born blind? Why did John include this miracle out of all the others? So let's jump into the story. Jesus is walking with his disciples, and they come across a man who's been blind his entire life. He's been blind from birth. And in those days, blind men earned their way through life by begging. And that was true of this man. We have it in verse 8. And now what would you do if you saw a blind man begging? That's the question, right? For most of us, there would only be two options. We would either pass him on by, I don't have anything to help him with, I'm uncomfortable with this, I am unable to help, or the other option would be we will assist him with money or food or whatever else, maybe give him a blessing bag from the homeless ministry that we have here. Those are our two options, but if you were a Jew in Jesus' day, you would have a third option. Your third option would be to ask, speculate, think about, what sins did this man commit to be blind? What sins did he commit? And this idea probably would not have crossed our minds, but it's on Jesus' disciples' minds. And many Jews believed that if you were sick, it was caused by your own sin or the sin of your parents. and the sickness was a judgment on you. Now, I do not believe that Trevor did something terrible, and that is why he is not here today. But if you're sick from birth, like this man, that makes the speculation even more perplexing. That makes the speculation even more, I dare say, interesting. Because if the man had sinned, he had to have done it before he was born. So what does that look like? Or maybe his parents sinned, and that judgment gets passed on to him. Either way, this is a theological exercise that they are jumping into. And the disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Instead of doing something to help this man, this desperate man, right in front of them, they engage in idle speculation about the cause of his blindness. And let me be clear here, the choice to speculate on someone's misery rather than to do something about it, to help them, that is not compassion. And that is not what we are called to do. They knew how bad a blind man's life had to be. Even today, with our technological advances and all kinds of things, it is still difficult for blind people. My wife is part of an app where if a blind person doesn't understand something on their screen, they can get a hold of someone who will look at their screen with them and tell them what it says. Jenny's done that a few times. But even with that technology, only a quarter of blind people find employment. Only a quarter find employment. 40% they say they have difficulty making ends meet. 30% say they are rarely positive about the future. To help us get a better understanding of what it is to be blind now, I found a real life testimony. This man said, "Perhaps there's nothing more disorienting than losing your vision. The world is turned upside down. The independence once taken for granted is shattered. One's previous existence seems as distant as another life. It isn't one or two things that need to be relearned. It's everything. Going to the fridge to get a glass of milk used to be something I could do in my sleep. And after I lost my vision, it became a multi-step process. And any error meant I found myself standing lost in a house I'd lived in for years." And that's modern day. In the days of Jesus' life, it was even more difficult. No technology to help you, no state aids to help you. You were thrown upon the kindness of strangers, the support of your family, and the disciples would have known this suffering. And their response to this pitiful sight is idle speculation. I pray that we do not have the cold heart that these disciples had in the face of desperation and in the face of need. If this is your attitude, if you see someone hurting and you say to yourself, "I wonder what they did to deserve that," you are in the wrong. You are in the wrong. Now, according to the Bible, disease is caused by sin. Adam and Eve disobeyed in the Garden of Eden, and before that, there was no sickness, no disease, no death, but their sin permeated into the whole world and resulted in the curse, and that's where disease comes from. So in one sense, the disciples are right. Sin caused this man's blindness. But they're wrong about it. They're wrong about how this happened. First, they are reasoning that individual sins cause a person's illness. And they are in error. There's no connection between a person's behavior and their ongoing health. Now, there are things that contribute to that. If you abuse your body, you drink too much, you eat the wrong foods, you do drugs, you don't sleep like you should, there is a direct connection between that and your health, but that's not what this man's dealing with. He was born blind. No sin this man has committed has caused him to be blind. And the disciples are wrong in another way too. Faced with a tragic situation, they failed to take into account God's mercy and God's sovereign power, his ability to turn seemingly hopeless situations into an opportunity for blessing and an opportunity for good. In their minds, there was no hope for this man. Listen to Jesus' words. Jesus answered, "It is not that this man sinned or his parents, that the works of God might be displayed in him." All you disciples see is a hopeless case, a helpless case. And you idly speculate, have you forgotten that God is a God of mercy? And he loves to take hopeless causes and do something great with them. Bring out the good. God will bring things out of what you see as this tragedy. And this tragedy will bring him glory. This happens so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. If only you and I could be filled with that same confidence in this truth. When we're faced with a tough situation, when we're faced with a tragedy, either in our own lives or in the lives of others. If only instead of gloom, we trusted in the mercy and the power of God, we turned to him in hopeless situations. God may increase our small faith. So what happens next? Jesus gently rebukes the disciples, which I would argue potentially John is being nice about that. And the blindness of this man sparks a metaphor about night and day. See, in those days, you had to work. You had to work, but you could only work during the day. As soon as the sun went down, the tools went down. We must work. Work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work, and as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Jesus is saying, gentlemen, we do not have time for idle speculation. We've got work to do. Before long, our time is going to run out. There was a single-mindedness, an urgency that Jesus had, which is so often lacking in his followers. Time is precious. Time is running out. Let's not waste it. There was a missionary named C.T. Studd, which is an awesome last name. And he wrote a poem in the late 1800s. And the repeated part of that poem is, "Only one life will soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last." You've potentially heard of a Christian songwriter named Stuart Townsend. And he lost his brother in 2007 to cancer. And just like death does, it makes you think. It makes you ponder the shortness of life. And he wrote a song that includes these words. "For time is given and time is taken away. The least that we can do is make the most of every day." And so I want to know, are you and am I making use of the precious time that God has given us? Are we doing useless things with that time? Are we doing things that are profitable for God's glory? Do we waste the day with nothingness and trial things? I'm here to remind you that one day, you will be called to give an account of how you used every gift that God has given you. And one of those gifts is time. Jesus said, disciples, stop wasting your time on idle, unprofitable, theological speculation. As long as it is day, we got to do the work of the person who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. And with that rebuke, Jesus takes on the work of healing. And this was my favorite healing when I was a kid, because this is gross. This is gross. He does it so strange. Jesus spits on the ground, and spit, as every doctor and toddler will tell you, is super hygienic. And he makes a clay paste, and he puts it over the man's eyes. Now, I don't believe he put it in the man's eyes. I think the man's eyes were already shut to protect his eyes, since he can't see where he's walking. He put the mud on the man's eyelids, the man who was born blind. What a strange thing to do. Why not just say, healed? Why not do that, right? But every miracle of Jesus is specific and unique to the person he is healing. Jesus knew the needs of this man, and no doubt he had reasons that suited his particular needs. I think Jesus wanted to communicate to this man that this healing came from Jesus himself. Because he can't see, but he can hear, and he can feel, and he would have heard Jesus spit in the mud. He would have heard Jesus making a mud pie. He would have felt Jesus slathering it on his eyelids. Jesus said, it is me who's healing you. The power is coming from me. And by putting the mud on his eyes, which the man would have, and I, let me tell you, this man would have wanted to wash this off ASAP. Spit mud on your face is no good. Jesus is testing this man's obedience. Jesus said to him, go, wash in the pool of Siloam. Don't just wash off the spit mud anywhere. Go to the pool of Siloam, and if this man really believes that Jesus can heal him, he's going to obey. He's going to go only to this pool, and he's only going to wash it off there. So does the man believe? Does the man believe Jesus has the power to heal his sight? Yes, he does. So he went and washed and came back seeing. What a world of wonder lies in those three words, came back seeing. His life was never the same. His life was transformed. He could now see where he was going. He could see the blue of the sky, the green of the trees, the faces of his family, his own face in reflection for the first time. I bet he went and got a great shave and a haircut that day. No more begging. No more relying on handouts. He could earn for himself. What a changed life. And you need to know that wherever the gospel has gone around the world, it has always brought hope. It has always brought help and healing and blessings. But, of course, wherever something good happens, there's always somebody that's upset about something good happening to somebody else. There's controversy. And some people said, isn't this the man that used to beg? And other people were like, nah, he just looks like him. That's not really him. And the blind man put an end to the controversy, steps up and says, yeah, I'm that guy. I'm that guy. Two lessons about this miraculous sign. First, this sign proves that Jesus truly is God's long-promised Messiah. In the Old Testament, there are all kinds of predictions about the coming Savior, about a coming Messiah. And all of it was written long before Jesus was born in Bethlehem. And one of them said that the Messiah would open blind eyes. Isaiah says, "Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf unstopped, and then the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the mute sing for joy." Healing of a blind man is a sign, a miracle that the Messiah is going to perform. In all of the Bible, Jesus is the only one to perform the miracle of sight. The only one. Moses, Elijah, Elisha performed miracles before Jesus came into the world. His disciples and the apostles performed miracles after Jesus went into heaven, but it is not recorded that any of them healed the blind. This is a miracle that pointed a special way to Jesus. Now, when John heard in prison about the deeds of the Christ, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, "Are you the one who's come, or shall we look for another?" And Jesus answered them, "Go and tell John what you hear and see." And this is the key right here. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have good news preached to them. Blessed is the one who is not offended by me. He knows there's going to be controversy, but he's saying that verse in Isaiah that said the Messiah is going to do all these things, you go tell him that's what you're seeing. Why should you, 2,000 years later, why should you believe that Jesus Christ is God's promised Messiah? For all kinds of reasons. But one of them is the way that the Old Testament said that only the Messiah would heal the blind. And he did it. He did it here, and he did it on four other occasions. In fact, no other healing type is recorded more frequently than Jesus healing the blind. This miracle demonstrates it. This miracle proves the point. Jesus is God's great and promised Messiah. The other thing we need to see here is that Jesus came to heal the spiritually blind. There's a reason Jesus uniquely and repeatedly performs this miracle. Physical blindness points to a far greater blindness. It points to spiritual blindness. The power of Jesus to heal blindness points to his power to heal spiritual blindness. And it is a wonderful truth that we rejoice in every Sunday. This man received a far greater healing of than just the healing of his body. He received healing of the soul. Jesus, having found the man, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And he answered, "And who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" And Jesus said to him, I can't help but, like, I'm a visual guy, so I can't help but, like, see this occurring while I'm reading this. And I right here, I feel Jesus said to him, "You've seen him. It's he who is speaking to you right now." And the guy says, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. The Bible teaches that we are all born spiritually blind, and spiritual blindness can mean a lot of things. For example, if someone says to you, "I'm a good person, I'm not a sinner," they are spiritually blind. They can't see their true condition. I'm a good person, but I don't need Jesus. They are spiritually blind. Spiritual blindness means we can't see who Jesus is, who Jesus truly is. We can't see him as the Christ. We can't see him as the Messiah. We have low opinions of Jesus. We might think he was a good man or a good teacher, but we don't think he is the divine Son of God, God's promised Messiah who came into the world to rescue us from our sins, and he rose from the dead to give us eternal hope. Spiritual blindness, above everything else, not being able to see who Jesus is. For this man's spiritual blindness was healed. He could now see who Jesus was. He called him Lord, which means God, and he worshiped him right afterward. At the start of this sermon, I asked you a question. Some of you write things down really well. Some of you don't even remember me asking, and that's totally okay. I'm going to remind you what the question was. What is the deep meaning, what is the significance of the healing of the man born blind? Why did John include this one? What is the greater miracle? And the greater miracle is this: Jesus came to heal our spiritual blindness. He sent his spirit into the world to open our blind eyes, so we could see the glory of God in the face of Jesus. So as I close, I got to ask you, who do you think Jesus is? Who do you think Jesus is? If your reply to that question is, he's the Son of God. He is the Messiah. He is worthy of my worship and he is worthy of my obedience. Thank God for the miracle of new sight in you. Thank God. Thank God for the new sight and the new birth that he's performed in you. I want you to go this week in joy and peace and confidence. But if you're thinking, Jesus was just a man, he was a good man, but I'm not sure about what you've said about him, TW. I'm not sure if I can follow that. Then I'm here to tell you, you are spiritually in the dark. And our prayer this morning is that God in his mercy will open your blind eyes as he did for this man. And I am hoping that when your eyes get opened, it is a lot less gross than spit mud on your face. If you are in either of those camps, spiritually blind or able to see, our shepherds would love to discuss this with you. Our shepherds would love to discuss this or anything else with you. Troubles, problems, heartache, prayers, praises. They would love to have that conversation with you during this last song. Today is Palm Sunday. Today is Palm Sunday. This is the day that we are excited about Jesus riding into Jerusalem on a donkey. And they're putting palms down for the donkey to walk on. And the people are praising him. And they're excited about him. But these are the same people who call for his crucifixion a week later. This coming Friday. So this morning, don't be excited about Jesus because he can work miracles. Don't be excited about Jesus because he is a great teacher. He is those things. But be excited about Jesus because he's the Messiah. He's the Messiah who's come to be crucified and rise from the dead so that we can be free of our spiritual blindness and see the light that only he can bring. God bless.